Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with Sumo Partners. If you're new to our podcast, welcome. I encourage you to go back and listen to some of our great guests that we've had over the last few years. This week, we're going to be revisiting a conversation that we had with Joe Mondotto. Joe has been a CEO of several companies. He's been a VC. He is taught at both Harvard and Stanford. He co-wrote a book entitled The Entrepreneur's Journey, and he has served on a number of boards as well as advising many companies and through times of growth. And he's got some great insights that he's learned along the way. He's got some wisdom that he loves to share with new and up-and-coming leaders. Looking forward to today's conversation with Joe. Well, Joe, tell us, give us a little bit of your history, a little bit of your career story. I'd love to hear your just kind of your journey as you move through your career.
Sure. So I was born and brought up in the Boston area, in Boston. What was at the time Somerville, Massachusetts, referred to as a blue-collar ethnic community. Ethnic at the time meant Irish or Italian. That's it. And it was an area where people were not kind of encouraged to go very far. And I think that's because from an economic standpoint, people were struggling. And so your job post high school was to find a job for life, the water company, a utility, blah, 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 blah. So it was one of those things where I knew I wanted to do something beyond that, right? And that was a very important thing. And in my circle of friends, there were a few of us that did go on and see the rest of the world, which was really wonderful. But if I had to sum it up, my life is kind of broken down into three distinct areas. First, the military. I spent 4.5 years in the Army. I was a captain in the Army when I left. That was really my first encounter with leadership in any way, shape, or form. Accountability, responsibility. Doing what you did and doing it well. Okay. The second phase, and I think it was directly related to the military and my experience there. I was fortunate enough to get private sector jobs where in the area of medicine, simply because my experience in the Army was related to medical. And so I was fortunate enough to lead the 5 different companies and 5 different medical specialties, actually. So I was the CEO of these 5 companies. And the good news is they were all successful, different degrees of success, but successful. And then where I am right now in the third phase is one of board work, coaching, if you will, as a board member, writing. I've been doing a lot of writing on governance. And teaching. I teach a class at Stanford. I've been doing it for many years, and I just love the students. I love the kids. They're phenomenal. So that's kind of like been my career in a nutshell.
Yeah. So you're teaching students. You're kind of giving back to that next generation of leadership. If you were able to go back and talk to a 22-year-old Joe and give him some advice, knowing what you know now, what would you tell him?
Well, I think don't be afraid to try something really outrageous, right? I mean, when you're young, you can afford the time, the energy, and the risk to do what you want to do, or at least try it, okay? And then you can regroup and then go down a different path if you have to. But really think about, you know, who you are, what your makeup is, what you do well, and what you want to do with your life, and go for it, really. I don't think people spend the time really doing the self-examination that I think is so critical, right? You really have to know who you are. But also, they don't spend enough time thinking about, gee, this is what I want to be. right? And so many of us go down more traditional routes that really doesn't make, I don't think makes great use of your talents. For example, post-business school, people go to work for a consulting firm, they go to work for a large bank, and Fortune 500 companies. I'm not sure a brilliant kid out of Stanford, Harvard Business School, or any other business school puts their talents to the optimum use in any of those settings. So I think give it a shot and go out on the edge a little bit. You'll be okay.
Now, I know you're mentoring people currently, and talk a little bit about just some of the mentors in your life and the importance of mentors.
Mentors are priceless. They are priceless. I had two mentors that I learned so much from. And the first one, going back to the military, I was trained as a medic, and I had orders to go to Vietnam. And while I was waiting to go, I got a note asking me to come in and meet with the commanding officer of the military personnel down in the Pentagon. And while I was there, he said, "We're reassigning you. We're making you an officer, and you go to officer training. But then you will be offered a position as an aide-de-camp to a newly minted general." So the newly minted general, the guy named Carl W. Hughes, ended up being two-star general. He was commanding general of Walter Reed General Hospital, which is a 1,200-bed institution in Washington, D.C. And I was going to be his right-hand person. I don't know where that came from, but in any event, I got hired. And I noticed every morning he'd come in very early, which made me start coming in very early, and he'd do a walkabout with the entire hospital. It was really fascinating. And I said, "Can I go with you?" And of course, so pen in hand, paper in hand, I went with him on his walkabout. And he would go to the different wards. He talked to the patients, talked to the administrators, talked to the clinicians, observe, say, maybe we ought to do it a different way. Blah, 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 blah. It was fascinating. I learned so much about, obviously, the administration of a large military medical center, but most importantly, how an effective leader works, right? He walked around. He saw what was going on. He knew more about the place than anybody else in the place. He interacted with personnel at all levels, which was, he was a very humble man. He was also a thoracic surgeon by training, actually. Mm-hmm. So he would treat people with the utmost respect. He would follow up. He developed a high level of trust in his direct reports and anybody else in the institution, because he'd do what he would say he was going to do. So just observing this man in action, it was the most extraordinary experience I've ever had, and it taught me so much. The second instance is a fellow here in the Bay Area, Ken Rainin. Ken was an entrepreneur. He was a graduate of the Ohio State University, had one job for a year, and then struck out on his own. And he developed the disposable pipette, which of course is used in every single laboratory in the entire world. Brilliant guy, tremendous street sense. He hired me to run one of his companies after I got out of the service. And what I learned from him was, if there are issues, you attack them. You attack them immediately. You don't let them linger. And there was nothing that he was reluctant to do or say to solve problems. He was so execution driven. And I loved watching that and learning from that. The other thing is, he said, you've got to learn how to manage your capital. And so the first day of work, I show up in Southern California, and there are two desks facing each other. he was sitting at one desk. I was sitting facing him. I said, Ken, what are you doing here? He said, I want to make sure you know what the hell you're doing. Okay. So the first thing we did that day, we looked at every account payable check that was about to go out versus the invoice versus the why and wherefore. There were so many people that were paying their mortgages with our FedEx number, et cetera. He knew everything that was going on. He didn't drive everyone nuts, only me, but he knew what was going on. So that was another leadership lesson where, you know, you've got to make sure you know as much about the company as possibly you can know at every single level. And that was a fabulous lesson and a fabulous mentor. I was very fortunate.
Yeah.
And I think so, everybody has to find a mentor.
So as you're looking at kind of that first leadership position that you had, and that would have been in the military where you're leading others, is that correct?
Yeah, by virtue of rank, okay? You have right. Sure. You have a rank, and yep. that says to the observers that you are a leader. Whether you're a good one or not, that's a second question, right, that you can leave to others. But yeah, you had to be a leader. And, you know, very few people come at it as just natural leaders. But in my case, I was very fortunate in that I could see what a great leader does and take some of that and apply it to my own life lesson, right? I was very fortunate.
So what are some of the common mistakes that you see new leaders, a lot of our listeners are either first-time leaders, first-time CEOs. What are some pitfalls that you've seen people, and how do you avoid some of those common things that you see?
The biggest thing I see, and I think the biggest, if you quantified it, one of the biggest mistakes one can make is hiring below them, you know, making sure that they are the key to the company's success or perhaps failure. And all you have to do is hire smart people that are smarter than you. They can do so much to help you, A, achieve your goal, and B, achieve the company's goal. And I really believe people, as a rule, don't hire as well as they should. I think that's clearly number one. And number two, empowering people, giving people the space to get the job done. You find a lot of first timers being micromanagers, right? And trying to do too much on their own. So I think if you are fortunate enough to hire great people, give them the space to do their job and just hold them accountable. And that's something that people learn. And another one is ego. How do you manage your ego, right? You are there to serve the company and the people around you. You're not there thinking about how you're going to be the boss. That doesn't work anymore. It never worked, but it worked, especially now.
So you're working with... you know, as you're teaching at Stanford and doing some of this, what do you see as far as in the next generation of leaders? Are you encouraged by what you're seeing as far as the people that you're working with?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the raw material is still there. I think the challenges, however, perhaps are a little different. I don't know where I got this. It was in the Wall Street Journal that the requirements for a leader are shifting, right? We've had so many new crises over the last several years that people have never had any experience with, right? And so now in 22, they're saying that the effective leader has got to be comfortable and tolerant of ambiguity, right? Who knew how to manage through a pandemic? Certainly not our generation. Also, some of the others are more typical. Trust, right? That's still, you've got to develop trust with your team. You've got to have curiosity. because you've got to stay a step ahead of everything that's going on. Great leaders are always looking to the future, and that will never change. The ability to and comfort with taking a risk. Okay, you can't sit still as a great leader. You can't rest on your laurels. You can't look, how do I increase sales by 5 to 7%? You've got to look at what's happening in the future. And I think that's critical to a great leader. And again, something relatively new, adaptability. Okay. Being adaptable to a pandemic, being adaptable to a financial crisis, which we're going through now. I mean, if you remember several years ago when the economy was going down, all these venture finance companies were raising barrels of money at insane valuations. All of a sudden, the well dried up and people just didn't know how to deal with it. So their initial reaction was just shut everything down. Well, that's a mistake. The first thing I'll fire is the sales team. Well, Jesus, where do they come up with this stuff? So being adaptable, but also thinking through the plan before you do anything too radical, and bringing the team. You've got a team around you. Help have them help you decide on what's critical and what's not.
So you've had to manage a lot of different companies, different settings. Yeah. What are some disciplines that you put in place earlier in your career that you think have helped you be successful, kind of daily, whether it's time management or, you know, just give us a little bit of taste of things that you've done that you think have made a difference.
Yeah, I think I just by virtue of me saying it, it may be counter to what it really is. But I think a degree of humility. Okay, you know, these are people that have put their trust in you. Okay, and you've got to appreciate what they do. You've got to empathize with them and understand where they're coming from, and you've got to be very sincere and transparent about it. They can see through you in a nanosecond if you're trying to pull the rug wool over their eyes, right? So that, I think, is, I really, really honestly believe my being just one of the team has really been a very effective way of managing. Two is getting everybody involved. Okay. It's, you know, I don't want to be in a position where everybody can blame me, right? I want to be in a position where this is a shared responsibility. It is absolutely a shared responsibility, and we live or die as a team. Okay. I think the willingness of taking risk, the willingness of taking risk. Don't be afraid to take risk. You'll either come out of it in much better shape, much stronger as a company, and you can manage the downside. Okay, you don't want to go too far on the limb, but you've got to take risk. All right. So I think those along with the so-called the humility, the authenticity. I mentioned the authenticity and the trust, and developing a culture. A culture is the way you do things. It's really simple. If you don't do it consciously, the culture develops all by its lonesome. You've got to be in charge of that culture, developing the culture, having the team members engage with you in developing that culture, and living by the values that you've established in that culture.
You've served on a number of boards. You've mentored as far as some of the people that I'm sure that have been CEOs on in those company relationships. But what do you think people miss as they're leading an organization for the first time, working with a board? What are some things that you'd recommend?
I've seen this far too often. The board is there to be as window dressing. That's a great tragedy. you've got a this team around the board table that have done everything you're intending to do or attempting to do, or everything that you didn't want to do. They've made every mistake. They've looked, seen every success. They're priceless as a resource. You give them a token compensation in the form of stock and a few dollars, and you have all these CEOs that'll take all your calls. In the Wall Street Journal every Friday, so my personal board of directors, it's really, really interesting because these people all highly experienced, and the board you'll have around your table will be highly experienced, obviously very successful. You ought to learn everything you can from them because they're right there and it's cheap. It's right. Very cost effective.
Yeah. Good. I know you teach, and I'm sure you're continually reading and staying abreast of what's going on in the world. Are there any books that you've read recently or in the past that you think would be important to put on a?
Oh, yeah. Actually, so when you were asking about, some of the traits of a good leader, there's a book, John Hennessy, who was the former president of Stanford University, wrote this book, Leading Matters. And John's career, he was an academic, right? He had never led anything. And all of a sudden, he was the president of Stanford University, a preeminent university around the world. He was an engineer by training, which is good news, bad news, in that he's, very, very, if I do A, then B happens. If I do C, when you're dealing with people, throw that out the window. Okay. So he had to learn a whole new skill set. He had to absorb lots of life lessons overnight. So Leading Matters by John Hennessy, I think, is a wonderful book. The other one, and this is a little different, Ben Horowitz. Okay. He was a co-founder of Andreessen Horowitz, the very famous venture firm. What You Do Is Who You Are is the book, How to Create Your Business Culture. I think it's a non-traditional approach to developing a culture, and I think it's a fun book. It's a fun book, and there's phenomenal lessons to come out of it. Okay,
great. Well, those are two I don't think we've had mentioned before. So that's great. Any favorite quotes that you like to refer to?
God, now that's a trick question. I'd have to really think on that. I don't have any on the tip of my tongue, but I find there's so many lessons to be learned by people that have done what you're hoping to do, right? Drucker's phenomenal, right? What did he say? Culture eats strategy for lunch, right? I mean, again, the power of a corporate culture is much greater than anyone could ever imagine, right? Very powerful.
So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
So I love walking. I love hiking. I love being on the shore. Here we are in San Francisco, so we have access to so much. I love riding a bike. I love just the freedom to kind of ponder this is a wonderful place to do that. It's a wonderful place to do that. And sports.
Any parting advice you would give to a newer up and coming leader?
You're in such a wonderful position at such a wonderful time in your life. It's like being in a great restaurant, so many choices and so little time. Really pay attention and take advantage of that. You will not be in that position as often as you would like, right? So do take advantage of it. Think about who you are, what you are, and what you really want to do, and what contribution you want to make to the greater good, and then do it.
Well, Joe, this has been a lot of fun. I know this is going to be helpful to those that are listening, and wish you continued success in all that you're doing, and definitely appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Thanks, Mark. Enjoyed it very much.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com.
This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.